All right, it is time for yet another fantastic episode of Africanalysis, brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, right here only on the Podcast Party South Africa. We're talking to Jean-Jacques this morning live from, it looks like a very, very beautiful courtyard in Cape Town. And he has no doubt got some excellent insights for us to share about all kinds of things that are going on. By the way, I don't know whether to congratulate you or not on the French elections, and maybe we should start there. What are these French election results and the British ones, frankly, mean for Africa?
Well, you know, Gareth, it's interesting. My early days as a foreign correspondent, the only thing we ever looked at, first of all, what would the change in government do for South Africa? The other thing, of course, was, what would having a black member of a touring rugby team do for South Africa? Well, you know, we ought to check the list of the players and see if there was maybe a black player there. So there would be storms and hurricanes worse than we're experiencing in Cape Town today. The thing is, the Labour government has been for a long time a better government for South Africa. And we would make a big mistake overlooking Africa, said the shadow foreign secretary, David Lammy. We don't know whether he will become the foreign secretary, but he's saying, and then this is because of the population growth in Africa, and it's very, very important to them that they have proper relations. Well, that's very interesting. With the French, we have, of course, a government of the left, and that's going to be good for South Africa too in terms of trade. Of course, had the right wing, the National Front, come in, there would have been all sorts of problems with Marine Le Pen and any difficulties involving immigration. But in terms of South Africa, you can bet that it will be the gateway for Africa, for both Britain and France, or continue to be. France, of course, has been hoofed out. I think that's the politest way I can say, of Burkina Faso, of Mali, of Niger, and even of Chad. We'll talk about those three countries a little while. But the French are the pen holders at the United Nations for Africa, and they'd like to continue that role. But being out of Africa, that something might happen, something might change in that regard. But certainly, none of these countries would want France back at this time. They believe that it was sort of neo-colonialist to have France still there at this time. And France tried a military solution to all the problems they had, those problems mostly being integrists, you know, and the jihadis that were there. And they've now moved closer to Russia, hoping to get better security. That hasn't happened yet. And to my mind, I can't believe it will happen. But the French people have the resistance among the French people has grown towards France playing this role. They used to hate to be called the policemen, but it was a fact that when there was trouble, they moved the troops in, the Légion étrangère and others. And I don't think that's going to happen again. So there'll be a difference, of course, in the whole French approach to Africa, but they still view it very, very close to their hearts. And the French are the one country in Europe that say Africa is effectively at our doorstep, and we have to maintain very good ties with them. So for trade, and that's the point, the geopolitical imperatives haven't changed. China is making better dealings, economic dealings with Africa, but certainly the two countries mentioned are going to want to get resources from Africa, as they always have. And the competition, they will be involved as ever in that so-called new scramble for Africa.
And what about what's going on in Britain? Also, I mean, you know, when these countries that are former colonial masters, we talk often about the division between Anglophone and Francophone Africa. What is the UK election result with Labour coming in? So absolutely.
Well, they were always a better government during apartheid, because they opposed apartheid more vociferously than the Tories. But they have, both under Labour and Tory, they have involved themselves more in Africa. But there has been a kickback from African countries like Uganda, saying that they care about trade, there's been a sort of domination. They try to tell the countries what they should be doing. And in terms of human rights, that was the case. You know, that they were, when Uganda decided it was, they passed a law to actually execute homosexuals. The Brits said, you know, you can't do that, but continue to get aid from Britain. So that kind of interference, which many might view as benevolent, it has occurred. The thing about dealings with China and dealings with Russia is they don't really give a fig for human rights or domestic policy. They're trying to get the best they can in terms of pecuniary value out of Africa. And I can expect trade relations with Britain, generally with Africa, to improve. And they will look more and more to getting better resources and so on from Africa. But also, how are they going to deal with the migrant problem? It's not entirely an African one, but it's very largely one. And are they going to expect to get fewer migrants? They certainly are going to scrap the Tory plan to send migrants who come over illegally in boats to Rwanda, a very, very expensive way of dealing with a very delicate question. In both countries, immigration is very, very difficult, but I think they will take a more benign view, will Labour, to migrants coming from Africa. And that might cost them electorally, but that certainly seems to be what Keir Starmer is saying.
All right. Well, I mean, it sounds to me like we really are just hoping that they'll be nicer and that there'll be more trade, because we don't actually know anything about the policies of either. It seems that this has been the British election where perhaps policy was the least important thing discussed, and we have only vague concepts being thrown around by the likes of Keir Starmer. You could also say that in France, it's this coalition of the wounded that's been put together, and perhaps the French people have been completely ignored in all this. I don't know, but the African result for this is yet to be determined, right, Jean-Jacques? I mean, they always can change their opinion on a dime, as they often do when it comes to Africa.
Absolutely. You know, Africa, foreign policy generally, but in this case, of course, when we spoke about Gaza and we speak about Ukraine, those were hard issues in the election campaign. But the only real part of election of Africa in electioneering in both Britain and France was on the right, where they would be saying, we're going to stop migration. A lot of people, a lot of Brits and French, are very sensitive to that. And as I say, the Labour government, we're expecting them to take a more benign view. But there's no laying out of a policy manifesto on Africa, which sometimes you did get, you know, whether during the apartheid era, would they continue selling arms, yes or no, to the apartheid regime. No such thing this time around. But I think it's going to be good news for Africa in both cases.
All right, let's hope you're right. The coup countries. So we got Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, from a confederation to leaving the regional grouping, Westcon, I think they call it. So what's been happening there? Because it seems to me like West Africa is in a bit of a state of confusion at the moment, to say the least.
Exactly. The French stepped in, for example, and stopped the coup and reversed the coup in Mali. But again, when they had problems, they thought this is a military thing. We've got to do it, and we're going to have to use muscle. And they did. They brought the Légion étrangère, they brought in troops, and they induced the Germans and others, the Europeans, to come in. And finally, many analysts and academics were saying, but this is not entirely a military problem. When somebody becomes a jihadi, it's not always for ideological reasons. It's simply because there's nothing else. You have to address the social issues. And this applies, of course, to immigration as well. Until you address the social issues that are driving people out of the continent or to become increasingly militant within the continent, you're not going to address the problem. Now, these three countries have all thrown the French out and turned to Russia. hoping to get better security, which hasn't happened yet. Now, at a meeting of ECOWAS, 15 countries, now reduced to 12 with the departure of those three, or imminent departure of those three, they've charged the Senegalese, the new president, Bassirou Diomaye Faye, to woo those three countries back in. And whether he's going to have any luck in doing that, I don't know. Interestingly, because ECOWAS was turning on the coup countries, saying that we're going to blackball you and we're going to, or red card you for having had coups. And eventually they said, well, do it. Do your worst. We've decided this is what we want the French out, and we want the government out because it couldn't stop the jihadis. So now, you know, do your worst. And they then said, well, if that's how you feel, we're going to be leaving ECOWAS. And ECOWAS feels it's the most, probably the most active regional grouping. The only one that even approaches it is SADC. They kept stepping in and militarily getting involved in issues. For example, in Gambia and in Guinea and places like that. They haven't got much of a chance of doing that now, and they weren't able to go into these three coup countries because the question being asked was, who's actually going to pay? If you do use military intervention, it's a very costly thing. Who will pay for that?
So one of the things that really caught my eye in the news last week, and I've been waiting to talk to you about this, JJ, is what's happened in Kenya. We don't often see in Africa people protesting a tax hike, and we don't often see people saying, hell no, you can't have more of our money to do things that you don't end up doing. In Africa, we're used to being just tax slaves for the regime that's in charge, and they take our money and we're never really sure what they do with it. In many cases, we can absolutely guarantee that it's just stolen, ferreted away. But in Kenya, they stood up and mostly Gen X's and a couple of slightly younger people than that too, just said, absolutely not. You're not going to raise our taxes. We refuse to pay.
That was very interesting, is that the Gen X is doing it. You say tax slaves. That's right. It was their parents who had been tax slaves. And they've said, how much do you think you can milk our parents any further? No, that's enough. Maybe some of them weren't even paying taxes. They were still students, and they took to the streets. 20 of them were killed. I think William Ruto, in his second year as president, realized just how stormy this was for him. So he made some tax cuts, and then he refused to pass the finance bill, in other words, the budget, and all these things. Essentially, he was saying, likened to a biblical tax collector, just not caring, just bringing the money in. But the thing is, Kenya has a national debt of 78 billion, and he's got to find the money somewhere. So now he's come up with, when he refused to pass the finance bill, pass the budget, still the demonstrations continued. And he's now saying, okay, well, we're going to have to make ends meet somehow. So here are some spending cuts that he's come up with, and he's bringing those up. But still the demonstrators are saying, no, not good enough. You said you were going to be for the people. You were going to be a, quote, hustler for the people. Well, you haven't done that yet, and you're going to have to if you want to stay as president. And I think many of the measures he's taken are survivalist measures, because he realizes that his very presidency is at stake. These are the biggest demonstrations and the most significant demonstrations Kenya has had since the days of the Mau Mau.
Well, it might be a portent of things to come as people all over Africa become more financially free, financially liberated. They're able to keep more of their money than perhaps they were in previous eras, generations. And maybe more and more people will start saying to governments, no, you actually have no right to take such a large share of what I've brought in, and that you're just parasitizing off of me. Who knows? We'll see.
Maybe absolutely.
It's kind of things to come.
Absolutely.
All right.
I think, and it's about time too, you know, even in a more easygoing countries, in a more liberal countries, the taxes, the taxation is becoming in our very own country, taxation is becoming insurmountable. You know, we find it quite unacceptable. Well, yeah, and it threatens our very economic well-being. So, you know, you can't just have a government saying, well, we've decided on this and decided on this, and here's how you're going to pay for it. They have to decide, okay, this is what we want to do. Maybe they need to have some referenda or something like that. This is what we want to do, and it's going to cost you this, yes or no, should we do it? So involve the people more. And in this case, the Kenyan people have got taken to the streets, not in waiting for an invitation to get involved more, but getting involved very quickly and very lethally.
Mm. All right, JJ, it's always great to see you. Enjoy your time in Cape Town, and we'll speak to you in a couple of days.
Looking forward to it.
Very good. JJ Cornish and Africa Analysis, brought to you here on the podcast party by the Johannesburg Business School, JBS. Go and check them out on the internet. You'll see all kinds of amazing courses they offer. They're very involved in helping to produce some of the leaders and the great minds that will help us to generate in Africa, not just more taxes, but growing economies. So go and see what they're up to.